Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Ed and Walker, and Steve Jordahl joins us. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm well. It's a good day.
It is a good day.
It is.
Tuesday. What's particularly good about today, Steve?
I'm vertical. That's always a plus. You start, if you can stand up and get to work, it's a good day.
Good day. Amen.
Yeah.
Is that biblical?
The sense of it is, I don't think there's a proverb that says that, but thank God.
We do like your enthusiasm about coming to work.
Yeah. That's right.
The Bible does say God's mercies are new every morning.
Every morning. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I feel it.
So every day of life is something to be thankful for.
It's a gift from God.
It's a gift from God.
Yeah. All right, Steve, what do you got?
Let's start with some politics here. Just want to kind of let people know, if they plan on kind of wading into the Democrat field and to see who the candidates are and what they start with, let's start. One of President Trump's, with conservatives and evangelicals and Christians particularly, is his support for Israel. President Trump has been an unabashed and uncompromising ally to the state of Israel. A foreign reporter, and you'll hear the question, asked Senator Elizabeth Warren, who is, as you all know, running for president, what her thought is toward Israel. I want to let you hear this. This is Cut 7.
Question about Israel. Will you make American aid conditional on a freeze to settlement building?
Right now, Netanyahu says that he is going to take Israel in a direction of increasing settlements. That does not move us toward a two-state solution. It is the official policy of the United States of America to support a two-state solution. And if Israel is moving in the opposite direction, then everything is on the table.
And you would be prepared to
Everything is on the table.
Is it a policy of the United States, Walker, to have a two-state solution in Israel?
Well, that changes per administration. There's no set.
So this,
there's no set regulations on
per
it.
Policy.
Yeah, different presidents can set different foreign policy agendas. President Trump has been one of being a strong ally of Israel. And if the Palestinians want peace, then President Trump's willing to meet them in the middle. President Obama, on the other hand, was very sympathetic to the Palestinians. And he snubbed Netanyahu on a couple occasions. So, yeah, whatever the president wants to do on foreign policy with Israel, they can set different priorities. So she can set her own priorities, which may be not necessarily friendly to Israel.
And we see the leaders of the Democrat Party, namely people like Rashida Tlaib and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, not even wanting to recognize the country. They're one of those, I think it was Tlaib, who on a map in her office kind of scratched out the word Israel and put Palestine in there.
Right.
So I don't think that any of these candidates are going to be particularly friends to Israel.
No, and I think part of the conservative position is that if there's going to be any kind of a two-state solution, the Palestinians have to, and other Arab countries, have to agree that Israel has a right to exist. And
you kind of start there, don't you?
You got to start there, because that's been kind of the downfall of any kind of two-state solution, is you've got Palestinian leaders who don't want to recognize the nation of Israel.
Right.
And they want Israel to make all the concessions, and you don't want to, and the Palestinian leadership doesn't want to recognize their right to exist.
Yeah.
So it's a non-starter. So where do you go from there? A two-state solution when you got one side who doesn't even think the other side has a right to exist.
Listen, the Democrats, I can't think of one of them that is what you would call pro-Israel. I can't think of one of them. President Obama had this insane idea about going back to the 1967 borders. 67 or 69? I want to say borders.
You mean 60s, yeah. Before the 67 war, you mean?
Mm-hmm, yes. Right. Uh-huh. Which would if Israel did that, it would be they put their whole country at risk
right.
immediately because the it would be so easy to be attacked. The Tel Aviv airport would be.
You want to stop the Syrian civil war? Give them the Golan Heights. They will stop fighting among themselves in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Israel can't. If you've ever traveled, if you've traveled there, or even if you haven't, if you look at the map, Israel cannot give up any more land. They cannot give up any more. They have to survive. You know what I'm saying? So they have to look out for their best interest. But the Democrats, you know, where are the Democrats on China human rights violations? Why don't they say China needs to give up half their land for the Tibetan monks? You know, or I don't know.
Well, so, China, give up your dreams of incorporating Taiwan.
Right? Yeah. What in the squad deal with that one?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just always, it's almost biblical, if it isn't biblical. Mm-hmm. It's always anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish, anti-Israel. That's the United Nations. They live for that day after day after day. And they completely ignore, most of the time, these other human rights violations that are far worse.
Yes.
The Arabs get to vote in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? They even get to vote in Israel. The non-Jews, the Arabs, and you can be a Christian over there, too. They're in the vast minority, but they get to, if you're an Israeli citizen, you get to vote as well. So, no wonder President Trump's very popular with the people of, you know, with most people in Israel, because he is standing with them. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, they don't even sound like they know what they're talking about when they're discussing Israel. To me, they don't. They don't sound well versed at all
right.
on the topic. All right, what do you got?
The Masters Track Cycling World Championships were held in Manchester here this last week or so.
Manchester where?
England.
Okay.
And
this was a women's competition?
Well, it was supposed to be a women's competition.
That's a big deal, though, in the bike racing world, right?
Well, it's a Masters competition. So it would be like if it was a track, you could be the fastest 40-year-old in the world.
Okay.
You're not going to get to the Olympics. Usain Bolt is still going to beat you until he's like 80. But, but yeah, it is a big deal. There's medals and everything. And a man named Rachel McKinnon won. Yes, I did say that. A man named Rachel McKinnon won gold in the women's 35 to 39-year-old sprint event. And as you may imagine, she is posing these days as a woman. She tweeted out,
You're calling her she.
Oh, he. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's hard when his name is Rachel.
That's right.
Yeah.
He got pushback from women in the division saying this is just not fair. We could have won a gold. He tweeted out, I have yet to meet a real champion who has a problem with trans women. Real champions want stronger competition. If you win because bigotry got your competition banned, you're a loser.
Wow.
This pits people who believe in women's athletics versus people who believe in trans, what do you call them?
Rights.
Transsexual.
Transvestites.
Well.
What do you call them?
Just transgendered individuals. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about this topic before. It's going to be interesting to see who wins, because if the trans people win, it's going to be ultimately the end of women's athletics as we know it. And this is what this woman is saying, who finished second place behind the dude who says he's a woman.
Right.
And she's saying it's not fair. It's not fair.
Her name is Jennifer Wagner Asali.
And she's a real lady. A real woman.
Yeah, she took bronze behind McKinnon last year, but did not compete on Saturday. She says it's an unfair race. And I accepted that when I pinned on the number, and I tried to do my best to overcome the unfairness. And she said, if we continue to let this happen, there will be men's sports and co-ed sports, but there won't be any women's sports anymore.
Yeah. So if you're a supporter of women's athletics, where do you stand on this?
Well, if you say anything about the transgendered competitors, then you're a bigot. This is the insanity. This McKinnon, Rachel McKinnon, is his name. This is the bizarre way that this thing works. You force doctors, you force the records keepers to change your documents to say female. And this is what McKinnon said. All my medical records say female. My doctor treats me as a female person. My racing license says female. But people who oppose my existence still want to think of me as a male. So if we want to say that I believe you're a woman for all of society, except for this massive central part that is sport, then that's not fair. So the guy who says he's a woman, because this is so potent, this movement, it forces doctors, I've got to believe 99% of them, to go, I can't believe I have to do this. But yes, I'm changing your medical records to say female because I don't want to lose my job. Well, then the trans woman, the man who says he's a woman, says, well, my medical records say that I'm a female, so you're the bigot.
How does a group with that represents such a tiny walker proportion of people, or percentage, I should say, wield so much power? I mean, there can't be more than
0.002.
Okay. Well, because they politically they've had the loudest voice, and they've done the best job at convincing the general public that anyone who opposes their agenda, their sexual revolution agenda, they're hateful, they're bigoted, they're backwards thinking. They've convinced people of that, even people who don't agree with them, of that notion. Thus, any idea they have is automatically accepted without even being questioned, such as men being able to compete in women's sports.
Well, yeah.
Well, you said the magic words, sexual revolution. So this tiny, tiny percentage has allied itself and vice versa to the sexual revolution. So you have all these people, especially the elitists, those who are in power, who believe in what the sexual revolution has done and is doing. And so if you're allied to that, they'll all come to your aid.
Yeah.
They'll support you.
Yeah, because if you don't have a traditional or a biblical view of human sexuality, then and you're for polygamy or adultery or fornication, then if you're for that, then why would you oppose any other form of sexual deviancy?
Yeah. I will say, excellent points all. I will say this. It does pit ideologically lesbianism versus transgenderism because, well, not necessarily just lesbianism, I'll say feminism. They're not one and the same. But in other words, the whole idea of feminism is that women should be able to compete on an equal playing field, right? To use another sports analogy, but I'm talking about in all walks of life. That's what they talk about. True,
yes.
Feminism,
right?
That's so now. Feminists are kind of faced with this: are we for women's athletics, or are we for letting men into women's athletics and ultimately killing a special place where women can compete against each other?
Well, this is an excellent point that you're bringing up about lesbians and or feminists. You ever been in a swimming pool and someone throws a ball in and you ever try to keep it submerged? You try to hold it down and it keeps popping up because it's got that air, that pressure.
Right.
Okay, that's biology. Okay, biology keeps, you try to suppress it, and you try to suppress God's design, to Walker's point, about a biblical understanding of human sexuality, gender, marriage, family. You try to suppress that, and what's happening is that the biological truth keeps popping up. So if you're a feminist, or you're a lesbian, or you're other member of the sexual revolution, you keep trying to suppress what God has created us to be, but you can't forever. It keeps popping up at the most inconvenient times. And so this is what's happening in women's sports, because you will never, ever, ever have the opposite. You won't ever have a woman going into men's professional sports or men's collegiate sports and being able to compete, because men have more muscle mass, stronger bone density, all those kinds of things. You can only have men competing in women's sports and dominating, because biology doesn't lie. The ball comes to the surface eventually.
Yeah.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim with Ed and Walker and Steve. Steve, what do you got next?
Well, this is on the same line. A court in Texas, of all places, ruled this last week that a man named Jeffrey Younger could not save his son James from chemical castration that his mom— this is a divorce case, so I want to give people a heads up.
And let's warn our parents, okay?
Yes.
If we want to talk about something. So just a kind of a warning, we may be talking about something that you don't necessarily want to explain at this time in your child's life. So
right.
You may want to distract them or even change the channel for the next few minutes.
So this is a family that's going through a divorce. The mom has wanted this young boy to be a girl from a very early age, too. I think I read somewhere she started withholding affection from this boy if he didn't wear a dress and everything. The dad has been fighting this in court. Last week, the 21st, was that? That might have been yesterday. A jury ruled that the father has no right to keep his ex-wife, from transitioning the son. And it means that Mr. Younger will be required to affirm James as a girl. He wants to use the name, or mom wants him to use the name Luna, despite his religious and moral objections. When this boy is with his dad, he's all boy. When he goes to his mom, mom dresses him up as a girl and tea parties and dolls and the whole bit. And he was on, the dad was on the Luke Macias show a little earlier, and said, I wanted to play a little bit about what his life, how he describes his life now. This is cut.
Imagine how you would feel seeing what I believe is actual sexual abuse. I believe this is not just emotional abuse, but is the very most fundamental form of sexual abuse, tampering with the sexual identity of a vulnerable boy. Every single day, you have to see your son sexually abused, and you have to maintain your calm. You have to be the one who's calm, because the courts are not going to be fair to you. And the only way you can survive this and get your son through this alive is to calmly allow your son to be tortured right before your eyes and outlast the opposition. That's what it's like.
Now, complicating this, I'm not complicating from the dad's perspective. I think our listeners know where we would stand on something like this, is that the mom is a pediatrician.
And doctor,
Yes. And so she has had originally in the divorce gotten medical— what would you call it?
Power of attorney?
The power to make all medical decisions for the children, including James, this little boy.
And they're going to be starting him now on puberty blockers at 7.
Yes.
Yeah, you have two separate issues here. One I don't really want to touch because I don't know anything about it, and that is their divorce.
Right.
But separate from the divorce, but they're both mingled in together, is the decisions that the parents make, medical decisions for the child. I don't think any parent should be able to start giving their child puberty blockers and all this medicine that totally interrupts their natural development.
Yes.
As a male or a female, because these children don't know enough to make a kind of— I don't think you should do that no matter how old you are. But what I'm saying is, it's not like they're 19 years old and they can make their own stupid decisions.
Right.
They're so young that they don't know well enough. So parents, we should have some kind of regulations against this kind of abuse, but unfortunately we don't.
His mom is a pediatrician?
Yes.
And she's forgiven him puberty blockers?
She wants
at age what?
She's an activist. Well, he's 7 now.
Yeah. By I think at age 8,
yeah,
they're allowed to do
As Walker's saying, this isn't a choice that this child is making. This is something that's being forced on him by his mother.
Right. Well, here's where the lunacy comes in, is that the mother claims James has identified as a girl. Now, it's clear to me, even from way back here, I know very little except for what I've read today, okay, right, that this is a child of a broken home who, when right, he is with dad, wants to please dad.
Right.
When he is with mom, wants to please mom.
Right.
And now this mom is going to, because in the vast majority of these cases where a child shows at least confusion about their gender, they grow out of it. But if, to Walker's point, if you start giving them puberty blockers and the chemical castration, that is going to make irreversible changes. Now, even with the right, chemical castration, you can reverse some of the symptoms, but in terms of bone density and other things like that, you don't get that back.
And they have no data on what chemical castration or even puberty blockers does to a 7-year-old.
Yeah. Right.
I mean,
I'll tell you what, this woman who's his mother is sinning against God Almighty.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right here, and that's a dangerous place to be because something about a millstone.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Scripture is very tough on people who do things.
This isn't even in question. This is. I agree with the dad. This is child abuse.
Right.
And should not be allowed by the court. That's just tragic. Yeah. And if I was a dad, I don't know.
Yeah, what do you do? Because the court has said you want to have any visitation rights. You've got to affirm James as Luna. You got to affirm his
that's wrong.
I saw a conservative blogger put on Twitter last night. I forgot the name of the person, but he said if I were that dad, I'd find the first non-expediting
country
over somewhere that doesn't have an extradition treaty with the U.S. and I'd be there in a heartbeat.
Well, nowadays though, you'd never get out of the country.
Yeah, I know, but
I understand your point because. As a dad, you got, like he was just saying in that interview.
You got to protect your child.
I can't let this happen to my son.
Right, yeah. No. All right, Steve, we got 1 minute left. Is there nothing good happening in this here world of ours?
Well, yes, there is something good happening in this world. If you're a fan of Google Maps, you can now download a version, or it will be downloaded to your phone automatically, that will be able to report the location of crashes, traffic slowdown, lane closures, which is all good, but also police speed traps. They're going to put that in the mix. So now you can Google where to slow down.
How you can avoid the law.
Ah, that's right.
Put everybody else at risk.
I take a different take. My wife and I actually disagree about this.
Okay.
My wife is in favor of speed traps and all that, and I say no. To me, they just want – this is another hand in my wallet. Now, this is coming from a guy who does not go more than 5 miles over the speed limit.
Okay.
To me, it's just another cash cow. My wife disagrees with me.
I agree with you on, quote, speed traps. That is where they set up and you top in a hill or something like that.
They're waiting at the bottom.
Where they know they're going to get you because that's where people almost can't help but speed a little bit. But radar detectors.
Yeah, and I think there's a gap there.
Yeah.
If you get a ticket for going 6 miles over the speed limit, come on, man, to Ed's point. But there is a point where it gets dangerous if you got a guy going 95.
We believe in speed limit relativism. That's the kind of relativism we don't have a problem with right here. Have a great day, everybody. Keep listening to AFR. We'll see you back here tomorrow.